Amy Ray and Emily Salyers, welcome back to the Sunday Show.
Thanks, Pete.
Such a positive, upbeat note to start on. I love that song.
Thanks. Right.
Reminds me of kind of a 90s version of If I Had a Hammer. I mean, there's an obvious connection there. Has that been mentioned to you before? Are you offended by such a comparison?
No, not at all. In fact, I didn't have that song in mind at all when I wrote it, and it was only until afterwards when someone else mentioned it that I thought, well, I can see why that connection's being made, but it is the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a pretty valid connection. It's also the lead track from your new album, which is called Nomads, Indians, and Saints. I'm going to ask you why in just a little while. But before we get to that, I had this thought that there is something in the record business known as the sophomore jinx. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that expression before?
Yeah. Quite a few times.
Usually relates to second albums, particularly after an album that had some degree of success. Now, of course, you kind of avoided the sophomore jinx in a rather unique way. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, let's see. Our first album was actually in 87, which was independent, but the record company made that our second album. So this one that came out was actually our third, but it was really our second. So no one's really sure, but we tried to avoid it semantically. But yeah. I think it's still probably looming in the distance, probably the sophomore thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. Did you have those kinds of trepidations going into the studio for this one?
We really didn't at all. And that's completely honest. We were looking forward to working with Scott again. We knew him. We were working in the same studios in Athens and in L.A. We had a group of songs that we felt really strongly about. And we just looked at the first year, you know, as kind of like a thing that exploded, but we never expected it, and it was wonderful. But we don't really set goals for things like success in terms of record sales or Grammys or anything like that, so we couldn't really go wrong. We were happy with what the songs we were about to record, and we were in a familiar setting, so we had a great time making the record.
Over what period of time was it recorded? Did it go smoothly?
Yeah, it went really smoothly. It was recorded in 2 months. We did part of it in Athens and part of it in L.A. as we did the last one.
Uh-huh.
And, this summer.
It was great. No pressure. It was fun. We finished it up in August, and then it came out whenever
on
it came
time.
Out. On time, believe it or not.
I don't know who said this, although I think it was Paul Simon, that you have your whole life to write your first album and then 6 months to do the second one. Mm-hmm. Did you find that kind of pressure on your writing, or did you go into the studio well-stocked with songs for this project?
I was stocked.
I felt more pressure.
I was lucky. Emily felt more pressure.
I wrote Watershed and Hammer and a Nail in April, and we started recording in June.
But not a bad way to, I mean, they're great songs.
They came out, like, yeah. But to be honest, when April rolled around and I had those songs only as fragments, and I was like getting really frustrated with the fact that I couldn't get them out, I was thinking, man, you know, because it's not like we keep count of how many songs Amy puts on and how many songs I put on, although on the last record she had more than I did.
But who's counting, right?
No.
Who's counting,
yeah. But it's more like, as a writer, you want your work to be represented, so...
Sure.
So that kind of thing was happening, but it was no big deal. It all worked out.
Imagine the problems George Harrison had over the years. Here it's a little more handleable,
yeah.
I guess, is the phrase. Do you write all the time, or, as was the case when Paul Simon was here recently talking about his work, he literally sets aside a period of time to do the writing according to a fairly regimented schedule, as he described it. Which camp do you guys fall into?
I'm closer to that camp now, just because I have to be, because it's hard for me to write on the road. It's easier for Amy. So when I go home, I've started now to set aside like a time during the day or whatever to go over to my mom and dad's house, say, and get in that familiar place where I've always written songs and make a discipline out of it. But I couldn't set a big old block of time because, I mean, I'm not inspired by everything at the same time.
Yeah.
So.
And I imagine one of the problems, too, is the demands on your schedule have changed dramatically in the last year and a half or so since your first visit. Which writing camp are you in?
I'm in the completely unregimented, unorthodox, I don't know what I'm doing most of the time writing camp.
When the muse is there, you go for it?
Yeah. And I'm a relatively prolific writer, but I don't consider my work like of the highest quality or anything. I think that there's a certain gift to being able to regiment your time and you and be able to craft your words like that. And I'm not that kind of writer.
I think I asked you this on one of your previous visits, but I'll make the point again in connection with the new album. Are there times when you collaborate and help each other out with a song?
Well, we help each other out, but we don't ever collaborate. But I'll play a song during soundcheck.
I mean, is that a conscious upfront decision and a policy that you don't think will change as time goes on?
It's conscious, it's upfront, but if we had a song and we both, like I had a fragment and I thought, well, Emily could finish this, then I would give it to her and ask her if she could, but she probably wouldn't be able to because we just don't relate the same way to our songwriting. But we do play songs for each other during soundcheck, or we'll say, what do you think about this line? Can you think of any other way to say it? Or what is a chord I could play in this part of the song that would work well? And
should I repeat the chorus here?
Things like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, it's not, it's just asking for advice.
Consultant.
Yeah.
You are a consultant.
We're a consulting firm for each other.
The Ray and Salyers, or Salyers and Ray, depending upon whether you want to do it alphabetically or not. Consulting firm. Nomads, Indians, and Saints. I'm always curious about titles for albums. Why that one? How did it come to be?
Well, it came from the song World Falls. And within that song, those are symbols. I read a lot of history. I read a lot of things about different cultures. Those stood to me for people, tribes, so to speak, that have transcended the fear of death to a certain extent.
Ah.
Within that song, that's what it means. As far as an album title, all my songs sort of ran along that theme this time, and so
a lot of mine,
yeah,
close to that too.
Yeah, yours were more of the journeying thing.
Journeying, yeah, quests. You know, and I think the nomads, the wanderers. I think of that sort of thing. Like Watershed is a quest song and a journey song, and Hammer and a Nail is a self-motivational song, get on the right track sort of thing, and Southland is a reflection of travels and so on.
Uh-huh. So the song came first, and then you decided on that line as the title.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen on the Sunday show at 92.3 K-Rock to World Falls.